Chapter 29. Kip and Tia finished their laps, for Tia punching a boy who'd dismissed her as a little girl this time, and had no time to clean up before heading to practicum. Drafting practice, Tia called it. She seemed to dread it. Kip was looking forward to it, even if he was a sweaty, stinky mess. As usual, Tia led the way. It was on a different floor than their other class, sun side of the Prism's tower. But when they got to the room, Kip saw that Grin Woody was waiting outside the door. Oh, no. Kip, the wizened slave said, you're late. The Red will not be pleased. And I care so much about his pleasure. What does he want with me? Kip asked. You've been summoned. What if I don't want to go? Kip asked. Grin Woody's eyebrows tented. You wish me to communicate your refusal to the Red? His belief that Kip was a buffoon was written all over his face. The man clearly didn't like him, and now that Kip had been disavowed, he felt no need to hide it. It made Kip want to dig in his heels and tell the man to go to hell.
Kip?
Tia said. She waited. Kip looked over at her. Tia said,
don't be an idiot.
Kip frowned. Let's go, he told Grin Woody. He followed the man up to Andros Guile's room and found himself trying to hold on to his anger, but getting more and more nervous. Grin Woody opened the door and gestured to the heavy blackout curtains. So help me, if that old bastard hits me today, I'm hitting him back. Kip was pretty certain that he would do no such thing, but it made him feel better to think it. He stepped inside. Cloying odours, old man and incense, dust and sour armpits. Oh. That last was him.
You reek,
a voice said in the darkness, thick with distaste. So do you, Kip shot back, brain engaging 2 seconds late. Silence. Then,
sit.
On the ground, Kip asked.
What are you, a monkey?
More monster than monkey. You and I are related, after all, Kip said. Silence again. Longer this time.
I'd forgotten how reckless the young can be. But perhaps you're not rash. Perhaps you're simply stupid. Sit in the chair.
Kip groped around in the darkness until he found the chair. He sat.
Grin Woody,
the old man barked. The slave came in and hung something on a hook above Kip's head. He left wordlessly.
Lantern,
Andros Guile said. Lantern? But it wasn't on. Was Kip supposed to light it? Wouldn't that defeat the whole point of sitting in a darkened room with blackout curtains over every window and door? Besides, Kip didn't have so much as a flint. Was it a drafting test? To see if Kip could... Moron. It's a superviolet lantern. Kip tightened his pupils and the room jumped into alien, violet, superfine relief. It was a larger room than he'd thought. Portraits of the Guile's ancestors hung on every wall. Viewed solely in superviolet light, the portraits were lifeless, monochrome. Kip could distinguish the ridges and bumps from the brush strokes, but seeing the faces made thereby was more difficult. There was an enormous four-poster bed barely visible through the door's inner second chamber. And of course the heavy velvet curtains everywhere. Ivory and marble sculptures sat on the mantel, on the harpsichord. Kip couldn't pick a single style from all the art, but it all seemed very, very fine. There were a number of chairs, divans and tables, a clock with spinning gears and a swinging pendulum of the kind Kip had only heard of. Last, Kip looked at the man in front of him, expecting some horror. Despite the darkness, Andros Guile wore enormous, dark spectacles. He'd been a big man before age robbed him. His shoulders were still broad but skinny. His hair, flat, desaturated violet in the lantern light, must be silvery grey, almost white. It was sparse, dishevelled, befitting a man who lived without mirrors. His skin, too, was washed out, loose. Naturally darker than Gavin's, but bleached by age. His nose straight, deep wrinkles. There was an old scar along his neck up onto his jawline. He had been a handsome man. Clearly a Guile.
You play Nine Kings?
Andros Gyle asked. My mother never had that kind of money, Kip said. It was a card game. The cards themselves were often worth their weight in gold.
But you know how to play.
I've watched others.
The deck lies before you,
Andros Gyle said.
Let it not be said I'm not fair. The first game will have no stakes.
It will not be said, Kip said. He picked up his deck and was hit with another reminder of how different of a world he'd stepped into. Depending on the seriousness of the players, there were many different variants of Nine Kings. There were more than 700 cards, from which each player constructed his own deck. In villages like Recton, soldiers passing through might have a deck built by a small-town artist. The main requirement there was that the cards should have no markings on the backside by which players could cheat and draw the card of their choice. Nobles would play with cards made by artists and drafters together at one of the six branches of the card guild. Those cards were beautifully drawn and lacquered with blue Luxon, guaranteeing every one was uniform. These weren't those cards. Each card was Electrum, a mixture of gold and silver. Rhian cuneiform numbers denoted each strength and ability, and each was adorned with masterful art and signed. Some were inlaid with tiny jewels. All were sealed with perfect crystalline yellow Luxon. Jeweled knuckle bones and ivory counters and stained glass sand clocks completed the set. Kip tried to ignore the treasure in his hands and awkwardly shuffled the cards.
How do you cripple yourself?
Andros Gyle asked. He was expertly shuffling his own cards. Kip was surprised the old man asked. I got robbed. I fought and someone pushed me into a fire. I caught myself with this. Kip held up his hand, then realized he was holding up his hand to a blind man.
My hand. The wood was still hot. Still hot?
Oh, I drafted the fire when I fought them. Andros Gyle mmmed that. They played, and Kip lost spectacularly, barely even recalling the rules. He could hardly decipher the Parian numbers because he'd only just learned them from seeing the Blackguard scrubs stand in order. Andros, on the other hand, played blind. His cards had small bumps and ridges on the face that must have been code to tell him what the card was. It wasn't cheating, and it wasn't any advantage, but it told Kip that the makers of the cards were making them specifically with Andros Gyle in mind. No wonder Kip hadn't done any damage at all to Andros. The man was serious about his game. The old man was expressionless, though.
Another. This time, there are stakes.
What are they? Kip asked.
High,
the old man said. I don't have any money, Kip said.
I know what you have.
Kip thought instantly of the dagger, chose to ignore it, chose to answer as if it were obvious that he had nothing at all. Then what are we playing for?
You'll find out when we finish. Play to win!
Kip took a deep breath and played better the second time, but still got massacred. When his last knuckle bone turned over to zero, Andros Gyle sat back and folded his hands over his little paunch.
Today, you sat with a small group of young people who call themselves the Rejects. Among them was a girl named Taziri. It was observed that you made no particular connection with her.
Kip remembered her. She was the homely girl at the table, big smile, overweight, birthmark across her face.
What are you going to do? Kip asked.
Her parents sold 6 of their 15 cattle to pay for her passage to the Cromeria. She's going home tomorrow, because of you.
What? Why? That doesn't make any sense. That's not fair.
You lost,
Andros Gyle said.
We'll play again. Next time the stakes will be higher.